Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Monday edition of the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Hope you're having a great morning. Thanks for beginning your week with us. Coming up, we will start with the National Football League in Kansas City looking like the Chiefs of old in their game yesterday against the Ravens at Arrowhead. In 20 minutes, we get some extra football between the Packers and Cowboys with nobody going home happy. And since it's a new week, we'll debate who should be our Monday MVP at 6:40. I'm Jinx. She's Chelsea. Chelsea, good morning. We made it on the air just in time. Had some technical difficulties, and no one is the wiser because here we are ready to go. How you doing?
Yeah, nothing like starting the morning with a little panic. I'm pretty sure every wellness guru out there says that's how you're supposed to start your morning, right? We just saved ourselves about $3,000 because we don't have to buy a cold plunge because we don't have to do anything to our senses. It's wild to me that if you reach a certain level of like first worldness, that you have to start creating adversity for yourself. Like people do these cold plunges.
No way.
Do CrossFit where you see them like moving tires and you're like, that's manual labor. Like people get paid to do that and you are paying to do CrossFit. So it's funny that, you know, certain people have reached that stage of life.
Yeah, listen, if you do CrossFit, good on you. You're a better person than I am because you have the discipline that I don't. But I remember it was probably a couple weeks ago and the lovely Catherine and I were in the neighborhood and we'd had a couple drinks and then we decided, hey, before we go home, let's swing by the old grocery store here on the corner and grab a couple bottles of wine. And so when we're in there, we meet the guy who runs the local CrossFit facility here in D.C. And so he's like, you guys should come on in. You know, I've seen you guys out and about here in the neighborhood. You know, come on in and I'll hook you up and, you know, get you a discount or whatever. And we're each holding like a couple bottles of wine like, yeah, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe we'll do that, looking like total degenerates. And so we looked at each other like, eh, maybe, but not tonight. So if you can do that, good on you, because those are some serious workouts. It's just any time I spend in the gym, if it's two or three times a week, I feel like is a positive, even if it's minimal. So getting me to do something like CrossFit or an Ironman competition or a cold plunge, anything to that extreme, I'm probably not going to do.
Well, like my point is that CrossFit is literally like manual labor and it's expensive. Like that's
hard.
The thing. Like CrossFit is not, it's not cheap. Like people have to do it like only one or two times a week because it's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
So it's like wild to me the amount of money that you will pay to do these type of things where I'm out here doing like yard work and it's also productive. Like I get something from it. And I'm not having to pay for it.
Yes, that's definitely good. If I'm going to pay for something, then I got to get the most out of it. Like, it's probably worth it if you are doing it on a regular basis, clearly. But if you're just kind of dipping your toe in the water, then that's a lot of money just to maybe go in a handful of times, you know?
Yeah, but some people, it's like a cult to some people. So,
that's
like, true. If it's your whole community, then I get it.
No, it's not my community. This is my community right here. Placing money on sports, maybe trying to win some, maybe losing from time to time. Let's hear about your bets.
Yeah, 1-1 over the weekend. Meh. But best bet at least was a winner, and I didn't lose it by 1 yard, which was a nice change from, you know, three of my bets last week that lost by a mere yard. So Emeka Ibuka of the Bucks had him 60-plus receiving yards for -124. He finished with a cool 101 receiving yards. So a nice little dub for that one against the Eagles. And then how about this one? This felt like an easy winner. Nothing's ever easy in the NFL. I should have known this. I had the Packers on the money line plus the Chargers on the money line for -141. The Chargers lost this before it could even get to Sunday night football. But that's the way it goes in the NFL. We love the chaos. We love the parody. But I just wish it didn't have to happen in one of my bets.
I hear you. Had a big card this weekend. Five bets on the card, starting on Friday with Major League Baseball, then did some college football. So 2-3 weekend for this guy. But a pretty good week. Dockster had the Guardians on the money line on Friday night. That was a loss as the Rangers win 7-3. So we wrap up last week. You went 4-6. I went 11-8. And the Dockster 2-2. If you're curious about our parlays, the Double D Degenerate Parlay 3-7 and our Show Parlay, not great. You were the only winner. We went 1-4, but we have won this parlay before this season, so we'll give it another whirl on Friday. It is a daily tip here on the BetMGM Network. Great to have you with us on a Monday morning. And let's start with the marquee game yesterday afternoon in the National Football League. The Chiefs down the Ravens 37-20. The Chiefs were a home dog getting 2.5 points. They're plus 125 on the money line. And the overheads total set at 48.5. Patrick Mahomes, a vintage performance. 25 of 37, 270 yards, 4 touchdowns to 4 different players.
End zone bound. Caught. Touchdown, Kansas City. Tyquan Thornton.
That's Jim Nance on CBS. That would make it 27-10 Chiefs in the third, and Mahomes was not done.
Pass, end zone, caught, touchdown, Hollywood Brown, number 4 for Mahomes.
Once again, highlight courtesy of CBS. So it's 37-13 Chiefs. Mahomes, his first 4-touchdown game since October of 2023. Xavier Worthy returns to the lineup. 5 catches, 83 yards. Travis Kelce, 5 receptions, 48 yards. By the end of this game, the Ravens were without 7 starters on defense because of various injuries. But the biggest injury of all, Lamar Jackson leaves with a hamstring injury. The Chiefs look awesome, and the Ravens have some real issues right now.
Absolutely. Starting with their quarterback. Even though I will say this didn't look like a major injury when it happened, I understand that soft tissue injuries sometimes can look like they're not a big deal, especially when it's your hamstring. But, like, Lamar Jackson walked off the field. He slammed his helmet. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's not even out for an entire week with this injury. But the injuries on the defense, they're a real problem. Like, the fact that you gave up 37 points to a Chiefs offense that had kind of been sputtering. And I understand it's still Patrick Mahomes, and they still have a ton of great pieces and a ton of championship DNA. But still, like, you can't go winning games when you give up 37 points. Like, this has been the problems for the Ravens all season long, where their offense usually does their job, but the defense can't slow it down. So it's turning into one of those years that just don't feel like the year for the Ravens.
No, not at all. Now, if you look at the rest of their schedule, it's manageable. And I will say they have lost to 3 very good teams, right? So you lose to the Bills, the Lions, and the Chiefs. There's no shame in that. But when you look at their record right now, they sit at 1-3. Only 5 teams in the 14-team playoff era have ever made the postseason. So is this going to trend the wrong way for Baltimore? Are we going to be talking about Baltimore at the end of the season not making the playoffs? I mean, if Lamar Jackson is out for an extended period of time and it's Cooper Rush instead, Cooper Rush, one of the better backup quarterbacks in the NFL. But it just, something feels off with the Ravens despite those losses, whether it's giving up a big lead, just not performing well, not executing. And then yesterday, they look completely discombobulated. This Baltimore team, despite the losses, still hasn't performed at maybe a level that we thought we were going to see this season. Am I crazy?
No, because they were one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl. So, like, absolutely, expectations were sky high, as they are every year, when you have Lamar Jackson as your quarterback and Derrick Henry in the backfield and all these weapons. But I will say this. Like you mentioned, the schedule has been extremely tough. Like, all three of those losses are to, like, Super Bowl favorites. So I think that you maybe try to forge on. I think the disappointing part is the injuries, because it would be one thing if they came out of this and they're fully healthy and it's just they're not, you know, getting the last play to go in their favor. But I will say this as well. In the AFC North, it does not feel like there is a juggernaut in this division. You know, the Steelers are 3-1, but it feels like they are still fully capable of losing games. The Bengals are 2-1, but they've got Jake Browning. The Browns are 1-3, and they're the Browns. So I think this division is still winnable. You still got some head-to-head games for the Ravens between some of these other teams in their division. So that's the thing. If they can still win their division somehow, they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that has to be the focus, which is, all right, let's get Lamar right. Let's not risk not having him later on in the season by pushing him back in the lineup early on. We've had some tough losses, and John Harbaugh was talking about this after the game and saying, yeah, we're 1-3, but no one here is panicking because these are three really good teams, and we've been really close, with the exception of that loss yesterday. And Lamar Jackson being gone had something to do with that. The Chiefs' defense had something to do with that. And then also the Kansas City offense and Patrick Mahomes. Like, I think it was Tony Romo who said, this team has championship DNA. Now, whether or not that carries them into the playoffs, into another Super Bowl, remains to be seen. But there's no question that now we're starting to see the Chiefs answer those questions that maybe were in play early in the season. And they're going to get better and better on offense. They had Xavier Worthy back yesterday. Patrick Mahomes was slinging around. And then we get Rashee Rice back in that Chiefs lineup coming here in a couple weeks, I believe, after week six. So the Chiefs ceiling continues to rise here, which it's always been pretty high with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. But now we're going to see the Chiefs start to play like Kansas City is accustomed to playing, or at least what we've seen over the past few years. They looked really impressive yesterday.
Yeah, if you have the Chiefs scoring more than 30 points, because wasn't this like the benchmark for the Chiefs offense like a while back ago, is that they were winning all these games, but the offense wouldn't get above 30 points, which at the end of the day, like a win is a win is a win. But when you have the offense doing this, putting up a 37 spot, and this defense has been consistent all season long, like that's the difference maker in my opinion. When you live at this Ravens offense, it's been so explosive. The offense has not been the problem. When you limit them to only 20 points, you are doing something right. And this is what we've seen from the defense all season long in Kansas City. So they certainly have a great formula moving forward. And I think the desperation has now left the building, because this is a big game for both these teams who came in with just one win on the season. So maybe the Chiefs can take a big sigh of relief and say, okay, for now, maybe we can relax just a little bit. You know, the panic meter can go down just a little bit. So it was a big win for the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I don't know why they didn't feed Derrick Henry more in this game. I mean, you're right about the defense. When you have seven players, seven starters by the end of the game out, you're just not going to beat the Chiefs. And I know they weren't out the entire game, but more than anything, I want to see the Ravens healthy. They need to get healthy, need to get their heads right, need to get some easy dubs here, and then we'll see how they look at the end of the year, because the talent is there. It just hasn't been the execution that they've hoped for early in the season. But why aren't they feeding Derrick Henry more? He had 8 carries yesterday. Fewest attempts he has ever had in his career, going back to 2018 when he was splitting carries with DeMarco Murray in Tennessee. And part of that is, okay, sure, the Chiefs are playing great defense. You're not going to get as many opportunities. At the same time, you can feed him more than 8 times in a game.
Well, they were playing from behind, so it just kind of negates the run when you're playing from behind. And Derrick Henry is one of those guys that kind of needs to, you know, gain steam going.
Yeah.
So sometimes he's not, you know, the most effective in the first half, but it's just tough. It was wild to me how it almost felt like they threw in the towel, like at the start of the fourth quarter. Like, I understand Lamar Jackson was out of the game, but, like, it didn't feel that out of hand to me, and it just felt like the Ravens just kind of gave up. So that was kind of shocking to me. Like, obviously, this is a team where you look at the depth chart and you're like, how does this team not run down every single person's throat? Because not just Derrick Henry, you've got Lamar Jackson in the backfield. So it's wild to me that, you know, that run game could not get going. But again, this is one of the better defenses in the NFL against the run. So I guess logically, it does make a little bit of sense.
It does. It's just that, you know, when you have a Derrick Henry in the backfield and a guy who, A, gets better as the game goes on, and then, B, can wear you down, sometimes it's not necessarily force-feeding him, but more than 8 carries. You don't have to feed him 25 times a game. But if you want to have some sort of success on offense, you want to open up both the passing and a running game, I would think that there's a few more times when you just get the ball to him. I mean, if there's a guy, if there's any running back in the NFL who can sort of break your will in the third and fourth quarter because he keeps coming at you, coming at you, coming at you, it's Derrick Henry. It's King Henry. He's done that his entire career. So certainly the Kansas City defense is no joke, but 8 carries, I don't think I just don't think cuts the mustard in any game with Baltimore.
Well, at the end of the day, you can't give up 37 points and expect to win many games.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the bottom line for me. And I'll say this. It's about Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry, and it is not equated into wins. So, like, you can feed him, but, like, the game plan is there. The Titans lost plenty of games because they force-fed Derrick Henry back when he was a Titan, and sometimes it's too little, too late. Because, again, you have to be in the game.
Yeah, I know. It's just you feed Derrick Henry, you open it up for Lamar Jackson. If you're feeding Derrick Henry and you're opening up for a quarterback who can't get it done, that's one thing. But I feel like that helps unlock Lamar Jackson. And now we're going to have to see how banged up Lamar is as we wait on the results from his hamstring injury yesterday. He was certainly frustrated, so hopefully it's not too serious based on what we saw. Next up, Chiefs play the Texans on Sunday, and then it is the Ravens going to visit the Jags. Coming up next, Micah Parsons and his revenge game in Dallas. Stay right there.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on a Monday. The Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Great to have you along with us. So Michael Jenkins, Chelsea Messenger here as well. At some point, we'll bring her back, having some internet issues. Coming up on the show, the Packers and Cowboys need overtime, only for both teams to go home frustrated. Frustrated probably, well, I would say accurately describes the American golf team at the Ryder Cup. The Americans losing to Europe over the weekend, 15-13. Hell of an effort by the Americans during singles play, because this was an absolute spanking during the first 2 days, where the Europeans came out and just dominated from the outset. And then yesterday, the United States was a monster underdog going into the singles competition, and then it got kind of dicey there for the Europeans at the end. And then they finally were able to capture it and win 15-13. They needed 14 points to retain the Ryder Cup. You need 14 and a half unless you're the defending champion. You get 14, you retain the cup. And so the Europeans do it with Shane Lowry tapping in on 18. And I do think it's a little sad that here we are the day after the Ryder Cup. And certainly all of that was thrilling. There's no question about that. But it's the behavior that we saw on the course that I think was most disturbing, because I think Americans are better than that. I think that fans of golf are better than that. And what ended up being a really spirited competition, particularly on that final day, was sort of marred by the fan behavior. And, you know, the Americans were saying this, the Europeans were saying this. It's all well and fine if you want to go out and you want to cheer for your particular country. But when you cross a line and all of a sudden you're insulting not the other team, but you are insulting their families, you're taking personal shots, they have to bring in extra security, you've got people passing out on the course, you know, guys being kicked off the course. Like, at some point we have to draw the line and say, all right, we got to be better than this. Rory McIlroy saying this yesterday, I don't think we should ever accept that in golf. I think golf should be held to a higher standard than what was seen out there this week. And even Justin Thomas said, yeah, I said to Shane and Rory, we felt for them. It was unfortunate. What makes the Ryder Cup special is the team competition, and clearly that the galleries in golf are different than we normally see. And that's an awesome thing. Part of that passion, you know, cheering for your country, is what makes it great. And I was all over the United States. I wanted the red, white, and blue to win. What I did not want to see is fans crossing a line where, even at the end of the match, I mean, someone threw a drink on Rory. and his wife tried to. People are taking shots at him. Like, at some point, the guardrails need to be in place, and we have to say, do we really want to be known for this? Like, and fall under the ugly American trope? You don't. We're better than this. And let's focus on the good things that we did see, which is Bryson DeChambeau, what, five straight birdies yesterday? Just making an incredible run, pumping up the crowd. You know, Rory and Scottie Scheffler going at it. And Cam Young was unbelievable back home in New York. These are great stories. And you can enjoy those stories and enjoy the competition and still cheer for your respective country without being trash, without being these garbage individuals who love nothing more than to take personal shots and then delay the actual action. And then, of course, you see the officers come in. There's just no need for that in golf or any other sport. So I hope that moving forward, even going back to Europe next year or in 2 years, when the Ryder Cup is in Ireland, that everyone sort of holds themselves to that standard and say, okay, we're not gonna do that. So, Double D, I'll bring you in for a second here, but I hate to go off on this. I just think the golf should be the focus instead of, oh yeah, the Europeans won, but also, why are we acting this way?
No, you're absolutely right. It was an absolute travesty to witness and hear some of the things that were being said to Rory and to Shane. And I get it. Those two are, quote unquote, the figureheads of the mm-hmm. European team, but have a little decorum. This is right. Golf. Like, one thing for sure. I think they need to really. Beth Page is an unbelievably great course. Do not get me wrong, but you have to rethink now whether you ever want to bring the Ryder Cup back to New York. I'm sorry. I blame the New York quote-unquote mentality of, oh, we're just going to get into their heads and rile them up and say whatever. No, that's not the way you win this. And look what it did. First and foremost, look what it did. It fired Rory and Shane up so much
yeah.
that they played out of their minds just to torque off that crowd.
Yeah, they were great. They fed off that negative energy and said, all right, if you're going to talk that way, I'm going to show you how I can really play. Like, it didn't help. Like, the idea is, oh, we'll get into their heads by crossing the line and we'll go as low as we can here with these low blows and we'll take a shot at you and your family and your marriage, all these different things. It didn't work. Like, it did not work at all.
I don't know how many times they brought it up that the captain of the European team, Luke Donald, actually said, take their hate and use it as fuel.
Yeah.
What? The moment you hear that, you should just be quiet. Because I think that would mess with them even more.
Yeah, and if you want to, and listen, if you want to yell and go crazy and talk a little smack, fine. But then when you're doing it, you know, during their backswing or when they're standing over their putts, like, that's not even golf etiquette. And I thought Roy made a really good point, which is golf can teach you respect. Golf can teach you etiquette. Golf can teach you sportsmanship. And I'm not saying it should be quiet as a library out there. By all means, it's the Ryder frickin' Cup. Like, I wanted to see the Americans win as well, but there's a line you shouldn't cross. We saw it again and again and again. And also, I don't know if you read the stories, but there were stories where they would let people in at 5 a.m. way, way before the first tee off, and people would be passed out on the course before 9 a.m., before the Ryder Cup even got underway. People were peeing in bottles because they didn't want to wait in line to get to the porta potties. You take that behavior, then you add the extra police presence, then you add the extra trash talk. It just made for an event that really wasn't worthy of the Ryder Cup, and I hope everyone is better moving forward. Chelsea, we're back here now. We finally got you back online. What did you think of the Ryder Cup?
Ah, well, I was very disappointed that when we got off work on Friday, I was so excited to dial into some Ryder Cup action. And the United States already was digging themselves in a hole. Like, I think that was the story of the weekend, is that the United States just had such a slow start that they couldn't come back from it. I will give them some credit for being resilient and making it a fight down to the end. But I feel like I keep coming back to this, and I've heard many people say this. The Europeans just want it more. And we've heard this. This is what they live for. They play better. They up their level of playing when it comes to the Ryder Cup, and it felt like that was the case this weekend.
Yeah. and they got it done. So now they head back to Europe in a couple years with the advantage, and they've had the advantage recently, and they were just the better team this weekend, even though the Americans really a nice push yesterday to make it dicey for the Europeans at one point there before they finally closed it out. How about some Sunday Night Football? We promised we would get to it, and the Packers, they tie the Cowboys 40-40 in overtime. Blah, kissing your sister. Cowboys were getting 7 points. That was huge for the books because everyone was on Green Bay. Total set at 47.5, and the over hits. 7 lead-changing touchdowns in this game. Dak Prescott, 31-40 for 3 touchdowns. Jordan Love also with a big night.
Flip sides. Cowboys bring in 4. Love throwing in zone. Touchdown! Romeo Doubs again!
Mike Tirico on NBC. The Packers go up 13-0 in the second quarter. It is a 31-43 night for Love, who racks up 337 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, all going to Romeo Doubs. But Prescott would answer in the fourth quarter with this.
Answers down the field.
That got rid of it. Here's Pickens inside the 10. Pickens to the goal line. He's in for the touchdown.
An unbelievable catch by Pickens that you should go back and watch for sure. Cowboys on top by 3 before Green Bay's Brandon McManus hits a 53-yard field goal to send this game to overtime. In the OT, Micah Parsons gets his 1 sack, preventing a Cowboys touchdown. And so he forces a Dallas field goal, Dallas up by 3, which means with 1 second on the clock, McManus again.
McManus for the tie, 34. Good, and this one ends in the second highest scoring tie game.
So after all that, Micah Parsons' revenge game, the Cowboys struggling, the Packers coming in as a 7-point favorite, it's a 40-40 tie in overtime, and no one was happy with the result when it was over, Chelsea.
Yeah, literally the only silver lining was that usually when I think of ties, I think of like the AFC North, and I think of like, it's tied 16-16. At least there was some scoring in this one. But I'm looking at these odds and I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe now's the time to buy low on the Packers. The Packers are still not getting at a discount. They still have the second shortest odds to win the Super Bowl. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what have they proven this year? Like, I understand they have a good roster, but we look at the Eagles and it feels like the narrative is like, we need to find ways to poke holes in this team, yet they're undefeated here. And now the Packers have back-to-back weeks where they are winless. I think that's the way you phrase that when you tie the Cowboys. And it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Like, if you're giving me $50 right now, I'd rather put it on the Eagles to win the Super Bowl at 7-1 than the Packers at 7-1.
Yeah, I think now we're sort of learning that the market doesn't always tell the story early in the season. The Packers, after 2 games, shot to the favorites in the National Football Conference, the NFC, over the Eagles, which even at the time we were like, let's pump the brakes on that. Because as we're seeing, the Eagles are finding different ways to win games. They went to Tampa yesterday, got a big win over the Bucs, held off that Tampa rally. The Packers are good. There's no question. But you would think that with this incredible Green Bay defense we kept hearing about, they would prevent Dallas from getting to 40, especially without CeeDee Lamb. I will say that I thought that Micah Parsons would have a little bit bigger game. Now, that play he did make in overtime was a touchdown-saving play. No question about it, where Dak Prescott had a line. I mean, he's 3-4 yards from the end zone, and Micah Parsons tracks him down from behind. So, if Micah doesn't make that play, Cowboys maybe win this game in OT. They do win this game in OT. So, that was huge. But I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe I thought Micah was going to get like 10 sacks or something stupid. But I thought he would kind of go off in a way that we didn't see until late in the game. He paid big dividends for Green Bay, but it just didn't. The game lived up to the hype. It's just Micah himself, I was expecting a little bit more.
Well, if you would have told me that the Cowboys were going to score 40 points in this game, like, that's as far from a defensive showcase as you could possibly get. So I think that's the thing for me. It's just, what have the Packers proven? Like, it feels, again, like the Eagles have to prove all these things. The Chiefs have to prove all these things. The Ravens have to prove all these things. And, like, the Packers had a great opening game, a 27-13 win over the Lions, which was a quality win. But, okay, they got a win over a hurt Commanders team, 27-18. You know, they lost to the Browns, and they tied with the Cowboys. So it just feels like they need to prove something a little bit more to me until I believe in them. I just don't understand the narratives. Like, this is one where it feels like the hype has out, you know, lived what we're actually seeing on the football field. And I think a lot of that has to do with the Micah Parsons trade, because that was such a blockbuster. But we saw this in the NBA as well, because people were like, oh, Luka Doncic is going to the Lakers. The Lakers going to win the NBA Finals. The Lakers did not win the NBA Finals. In fact, it was a very quiet exit for this team. So it's just one of those things where it just feels like the numbers at BetMGM don't align with the narrative that I believe for the Packers.
I mean, I think the Packers can be exceptional. I think we've seen that, but they've got to do it first. And also they've taken a step back compared to the first couple weeks of the season, which is not a big deal because they were playing all world, and they're going to get healthier too on offense with Jaden Reed coming back. He had surgery on what? His foot and his clavicle, I think. He should be back in 6 weeks, so that will be a boon to that Green Bay offense. I still think they have all the tools to make that run, but I certainly wasn't rushing to crown them after 2 weeks of the NFL as a team that was going to win the Super Bowl, and you have to be careful about that, you know, no matter who it is.
Yeah, absolutely. No championships are won in September. They're just not. As for the Cowboys, I do think this was a valiant effort, at least by their offense, because their defense has not been good all season long. They have been an absolute, run funnel where they can't stop the run. They can't stop much of anything. Felt like it's been a get-right spot for opposing offenses all season long. But the fact that, you know, they put up all these points against what's supposed to be a good defense, even without their number one target in CeeDee Lamb, like, I know that they didn't win the game and it's a tie, but I feel like there are some, you know, things to work off of in this game for the Cowboys.
Yeah, the Cowboys are going to be that team where you can score a lot on them, but on any given day they can outscore you just because Dak is playing really high level right now. Even without CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens was unbelievable. That highlight reel catch he had was something else. You'll see that again and again and again today. But the Cowboys can put them up. Can they stop anyone? Maybe not. It's just so strange to see a 40-40 tie. You heard Mike Tirico say it. The second highest scoring tie game in the history of the NFL. And Jordan Love said it after the game. It doesn't feel good. Feels kind of weird. They asked Micah Parsons. He said it was a 12-round fight on both sides. I think both sides could have played better. So certainly better than a loss, but neither team really walked away thinking, after all that, a tie? Ugh, no thanks. Coming up next here on the show. All right, it's a Monday. We've had our chance to digest the weekend, so we'll pick our Monday MVP. That is next on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. Good morning. Thanks for waking up with us. So, Jake, she's Chelsea. It is a Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Trying to pump myself up for another week. Coming up on the show, everyone will chime in as we each vote for our Monday MVP. Chelsea, I don't know if you saw it last night. The NFL made this announcement. Was it on X, Denton, Twitter, around 9? Did they put this out?
Yeah, I think it was Twitter. They probably ran a commercial for it during Sunday Night Football,
okay,
too, at some point.
The halftime show performer at Super Bowl 60 will be Bad Bunny. All you Swifties out there hoping for Tay-Tay. Nope, going to be Bad Bunny instead. I mean, you're talking about a global international superstar from Puerto Rico. And so I have a lot of friends who just love Bad Bunny. And he was here in concert. He was in D.C. a few months ago. Friend Jazz went to Bad Bunny. She loves him. A lot of people do, has a very passionate fan base. But I have to say, I don't know a ton of Bad Bunny music, but I certainly know that he is massive in his appeal.
Yeah, he's a global superstar.
Yeah.
So I think it adds something to the Super Bowl that is obviously huge. I will say this. He has become a bigger star, like in the celebrity world, it feels like, over the past few years. Because who did he date? Did he date Kendall?
He just married Selena Gomez, I think. Did he?
No, that's Benny Blanco. No, that's
Benny Blanco. Oh, God. I was told that yesterday. All right.
Yeah, Bad Bunny was involved with one of the many Jenners. I don't know which one is
I think it's Kendall Jenner.
One of them. Is it Kendall? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so, like, he's been a celebrity, like, you know, since that happened. He also was in the new Happy Gilmore movie. He was actually really good in that. So this is a big move for him. I think that he can definitely use this platform to his advantage, because that's the thing with Taylor Swift is that, like, she doesn't need the publicity. She is not somebody who needs to perform at the Super Bowl to further her brand. Like, her brand, like, already reaches, you know, more than, like, water on the surface of the planet Earth, you know? Like, she already has covered everybody. So this is a big get for Bad Bunny. I feel like I don't know that many songs by name, but I think he's one of those artists that, like, once you hear the song, you're like, oh, I've heard this. Because I'll say when we lived in the Dominican Republic, Bad Bunny was very popular there.
Oh, I bet. Well, and this just is sort of right in line with what the NFL wants to do, right? They keep playing games overseas in, you know, whether it's Brazil or whether it's Berlin, Madrid, Dublin. And so why not bring in an international superstar to go in line with expanding the brand, right? That's absolutely part of the equation here, which is, okay, you get someone who's just, you know, exceptionally popular and all over the charts, and then you bring someone in at the same time who's also an international name, and it just sort of helps spread the NFL and spread football to maybe fans who haven't been that exposed to it, and that's what the NFL wants to do.
I do think that the older demographic is going to be shaking their fists at the TV.
Yes.
Though. Like, I think that's the funniest part of when they pick somebody who's, like, kind of newish. Because, like, the old people are like, who is this? Why didn't they get Bruce Springsteen? So I think we are going to have some people who are unhappy with this.
Oh, yeah. It was the same thing last year when Kendrick Lamar was performing. It was the same thing. Like, I don't get it. Where are the Temptations? Why aren't they out there singing some of their doo-wop classics? It's like, okay, guys, you got to settle down just a little bit. What was the Super Bowl? This is going way back before the NFL was the NFL and the Super Bowl was the Super Bowl. Where they actually had a band play at halftime. Wasn't that like the Pontiac Silverdome back in the day? I need to look that up. Like, imagine a Super Bowl where there's a band playing at halftime. And that absolutely happened at one point. Like, my, how the NFL has grown over the last few decades.
I don't think I was alive just yet. But I believe you, because we've had this discussion before, to where you're right. And the thing is, it's not a paid performance. It didn't used to be this global behemoth where, like, this was the biggest stage on television, to where, like, it didn't make sense that they couldn't get, like, all these big performers. But now, you know, Roger Goodell's doing his thing, and it's the number one product in America. And
yeah, I was reading about the worst Super Bowl halftime shows. This is a few months ago, and I forget. But it was, it's amazing some of the things that they used to have. Now we think of, you know, it could be Prince performing, or Kendrick Lamar last year, or Michael Jackson, or, you know, Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson, all these different big name performers. But before that, they tried, like, card tricks. They had, like, a 3D performance where people were wearing glasses. It's really amazing because, look, this is Super Bowl 60. They've done a billion of these. So, of course, our recent history is, oh, it's always a big name. But there was a time when it was really gimmicky and they didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, but now is not that time. Now we expect nothing but the best. So I think a lot of people like Bad Bunny. I don't know if it's going to be one of those iconic shows. And listen, he could totally prove me wrong. It's just, I think for me and for a lot of people, you want to be able to sing along to a lot of the songs.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's going to be the case. Like, they're going to be jams. And I'll say this, like, they're upbeat songs that you can dance to, I believe. So it will be a good time, but I don't think it's going to go down as, like, one of the best shows in history. Or at least that's my expectation.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, now let's see who we like and pick a winner of the weekend.
Here are your nominees for Monday MVP.
MVP! MVP!
All right, here we go. I'm going to start in Charlottesville with Chandler Morris, Virginia quarterback.
Here comes the blitz. Castellanos in trouble. Heaves one towards the end zone. Intercepted! It's over! Virginia has done it!
Yeah, that was their defense coming home in a big way late there. Look, Chandler Morris is a guy who threw three picks in this game. But if you look deeper, he also threw for two touchdowns. He ran for three touchdowns. But more than anything, this is one of those massive program wins. I used to cover Virginia back in the day and spent a lot of time in Charlottesville. And it's an okay environment. It's not incredible. But the fact that they get their first win over a top 10 team in 20 years. The last time this happened was back in 2005 when they beat Florida State. This was huge for the program. It was a great game on Friday night, so I'm going to go with Chandler Morris.
Ah, that's a good one. And it's even better when I believe you were on Virginia in that game.
I was.
So that's always a nice, you know, addition to your MVP selection. All right, next up for me, I'm going to go with Jackson Dart.
13 to Neighbors, 7 before that. Here's a run again by Dart. First and 10, he'll take it in. His first career touchdown, and the Giants on top.
What a debut for Jackson Dart. And I understand the numbers don't fly off the page when it comes to passing. Only 111 yards through the air and a passing touchdown. But he also had 10 carries for 54 yards and a rushing touchdown. But the most important stat in this one is the win. At the end of the day, that is your job as a quarterback, to secure wins. And Jackson Dart did just that. I feel like we see this in the NFL all the time. It's not about simply winning games. It's about not losing games as well. And that's exactly what Russell Wilson was doing for the Giants. He was losing them games. So when you have a rookie come into the fold, which this is a difficult position, rookies in the NFL generally do not do well in their first game of their career. But Jackson Dart joins a list of nobody to become the first quarterback in 20 years to win their first career start against a team that was 3-0, because mind you, this was a good Chargers team. So a big win for Jackson Dart that probably gave Brian Daboll, you know, a little bit more longevity as head coach of the Giants. And you saw that after the game. Like, it was almost cringeworthy, the love fest that was going on between those two. So at the end of the day, a W is a W, and I'm going to give it to Jackson Dart.
All right, Double D.
All right. All right. I'm going with Team Europe, Ryder Cup.
He did it. 2019 Open champion stands tall and delivers for the European team who have retained the Ryder Cup.
Team Europe gets their first victory in the U.S. since 2012. In the group session, Team Europe dominated with an 11.5 to 4.5 lead going into Sunday. Tommy Fleetwood went 4-0 in the group session, and Shane Lowry drains the winning putt to secure the win for Europe.
All right. Good choice.
Final nominee for this week is the Michael Jordan of this era in the NFL. I'm going Patrick Mahomes.
Pass in zone, caught. Touchdown, Hollywood Brown. Number 4 for Mahomes.
For the first time in probably like 2 years, he finally looked like the best quarterback in the NFL. He's had a really rough like last year and a half or so. They still got to the Super Bowl, but it wasn't the Patrick Mahomes that we are accustomed to seeing. He threw 4 touchdowns yesterday against the Ravens. I know the Ravens defense is kind of awful, but it's still going up against the Ravens. You got to have that. You can't drop to 1-3 if you're Kansas City. As good as you are, especially with how good the Chargers are, you can't drop to 1-3, and he picked the best moment to have the best game to this point in the season. So Mahomes is my MVP nomination.
That's a good one. Chiefs now 10-1 to win the Super Bowl, which is pretty good odds on Kansas City right now. Again, one performance, but look, they're going to get better and better as the season goes on. These are some good ones. I thought Jackson Dart, Chelsea, was particularly impressive yesterday. I hate that Malik Nabers is now out for the season. That was absolutely brutal. I mean, what a loss for the Giants. Ugh, that was tough to watch. But Dart, I mean, you talk about a team that needed this. No wonder Brian Daboll was giving him a love fest when it was over. It's helped save Brian Daboll's job for now.
Absolutely. And, like, the Giants needed something. Like, it does suck that they lost the best player on their team, Malik Nabers, now with a torn ACL. But that glimmer of hope. And as somebody who is a fan of a bad team, this is all you can ask for. Just little glimmers of hope. Like, just little slices of the season where you feel like you're a good team for once. So the Giants got to have a victory Sunday at the hands of a rookie quarterback. And now you have, like, some hope for the future. Like, this is a great thing for the Giants, even though, again, Malik Nabers is now out for the season. That one does sting.
Double D, can I ask you this? I don't know if you feel the same way, but when it comes to Shane Lowry, like, I wanted the Americans to win, obviously, and yet I think Shane Lowry is just eminently likable. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want him to do anything to hurt the Americans' chances, but he's so much fun to watch. He's a very gregarious player.
Man of the people. Man of the Irish people. Yeah. Very much so. When you go celebrate your open win at the local pub afterwards, yeah, baby. That's what you like.
That's your guy. That kind of guy. And Mahomes is a good one, too. I mean, is he going to continue this trek? Or is this is not a one-off. I mean, we've seen, like you said, a year and a half of him being pretty good. Is he going to, now that he gets his full complement back, be that guy again who's just one great performance after the other?
Nice to have Xavier Worthy back. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, possible. And then Rashee Rice coming back? We could see that. I mean, certainly the talent's there. He's still Patrick Mahomes and definitely served some notice yesterday against a very good Baltimore team. Coming up next here on the show, we'll look back at the weekend in college football and... can we ever trust Penn State again? Anyone? James Franklin? No?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.